I've been all across this country.
Okie dokie, folks. Welcome back to Monday Night Shaw. This, of course, is going to be the first Monday Night Shaw that I'm recording since Spencer has decided to take his leave of absence or whatnot. So Monday Night Shaw here is now back on the Backbreaker Media Network and is no longer on the Wing Column Sports Network. For my first guest back on the Backbreaker Media Network, we've rounded up one of the veteran ladies of Alberta professional wrestling. It's Kat Von Hees. Kat, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, Kyle, and how are you?
I'm doing pretty decent. Yeah, pretty good.
Good.
Yeah, it's been super warm lately.
Absolutely.
Yeah. How are you holding up with the COVID-19 and whatnot?
You know, it's a bit of a different lifestyle, like different work schedules, and obviously like the people are a little bit more on edge and stuff. But I mean, it's kind of given me some time to spend more time at home, and like I've kind of built my own home gym now. Like I'm starting to get more equipment that's been on hold for a while, so I'm starting to like build a nice like yard workout thing. Once I kind of get it all set up, it'll be nice to like not always have to go to the gym in case they close them down again. So
yeah, I've gone a couple of times over to the Meadowlands, and it's the last time I was there they were very militant about it. It was weird.
It depends on which gym you go to, I guess.
Yeah, like I tried to just walk in and they were like, hey, where are you going? And I was like, to work out. And they're like, yeah, you have to book online. I was like, I did. And he's like, well, you can't come in yet. Oh, okay. So I just like stood outside and waited until they let us in. And yeah, it was weird because they were just like kind of being a little dickish about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, is that Good Life or where is that?
I just go to the Meadowlands. It's like one of the rec centers.
Oh, it's a rec center. Okay, yeah. I thought it might be like because Good Life is very much like that. They're a little bit more like scheduled and they lock the doors and stuff. But
like you can only go for a certain amount of time. It's like an hour or something, and then yeah, once you're done, you have to leave so they can clean it up again for the next group of people, I guess.
Yeah, it's been really weird because I'm not like a 1 hour workout type of person. So like trying to condense my workout or like prioritize what I want to do in the gym versus like what I can do outside of the gym has been a transition in terms of like my fitness life. But that's why I started ordering. Like I bought a plyo box and I bought like a 30-foot rope and I've got like a 400-pound tire now in my backyard. So I've got some like outside the box training tools that I didn't have at the beginning of the pandemic. I wish I'd kind of got these things earlier, but I don't think anybody anticipated all the gyms closing and then like all of the stores being out of fitness equipment. So
yeah, no, I think that's totally fair. It's nobody really saw it coming, and it's unfortunate, but I mean, at least we're kind of starting to get back to normal. And you know, today I believe August 2nd, so the mandatory masks thing just went into effect, and that's been a little bit of an adjustment thing too, because like now if you do walk into a place without a mask on, you kind of get like looked at poorly or whatever. And you know, I totally understand, right? Because nobody wants to get sick. So
yeah, I mean, people also kind of should, you know, I mean, I always felt like if you're really really super paranoid, like you should probably just kind of stay home as much as possible instead of vilifying people, because yeah. I mean, we don't know everybody's medical situations. Like personally, like I have a form of asthma. Like I wear a mask because I've kind of trained enough where I can usually navigate my asthma attacks pretty well, but I mean, that's not everybody. So like, and we don't have the right to know everybody's medical health history or any of that stuff, but I feel like, again, if it's really, really bothersome to you, like it's one of those things where right now you should probably, like, everyone just wants to get involved in everybody else's business a little too much. We're seeing that a lot in the States, you know, on the videos and everything. Like people just can't leave well enough alone, or just kind of like walk over to the side and go like, you know, have your opinion about it, but kind of keep going instead of creating a huge argument and starting an entire like, yeah. I don't know, making a big scene out of something that could just be like, make a comment and then walk away and like, have your opinion and then carry on with your day.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because it's like it's become beyond a health issue and now is kind of a political issue as well.
Yeah, like absolutely it is. I mean, like I understand why people are scared. It's a pandemic. It's like we really haven't seen anything like this since like 1918. So we're adjusting to it in a more modernized world where the population is like much higher. So we do have to worry a little bit more than they would have, but we also have more medication, more hospitals and stuff like that to deal with these kinds of things. So I'm hoping we're just kind of, you know, navigating this properly and, you know, everybody complies, everybody does what they're told to the best of their ability. You know, hopefully we all get back to normal as soon as possible, because again, obviously people want to get back to going to wrestling shows or, you know, going to concerts and like seeing their friends and family and just pretend like just acting like everything's kind of normal.
100%. Have you had when was the last time you had the opportunity to wrestle?
I went to Winnipeg, actually. I wrestled, I believe, in June.
Okay.
Yeah, so not too long ago, but yeah, it's been a while. I mean, there's always some opportunities knocking, but you know, I've just kind of been waiting to get back into everything because I have a few injuries I've been dealing with recently, and I'm not fully healed anyways at this point. Like, I'm still kind of recovering from all those things, and my body's getting older, so I don't recover as quickly as I'd like to anymore.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, but I mean, hopefully we get back to it sooner. Like with PWA, I hope we get a chance to start up here in the fall. That'd be nice, but I haven't heard anything just yet, so.
Yeah, I haven't really heard anything on the PWA front. I know, like, RCW, we've been running for, like, a month or two now.
Yeah, like, yeah, that's...
It's all small shows, though. Like, only 100 people are allowed in, and it's, like, there's masks available for people, hand sanitizers everywhere you look, so... You know, we're trying to keep safe while we're doing it, but it's, you know, I find that it's important for people to be able to get out and enjoy some entertainment, you know?
Well, it's part of like mental health. Like we're not as humans, we're not meant to be like isolated away from other people. And, you know, when you kind of, for some people, you never know if like that's the only thing they do every month, right? Like that's the one time they get to go out and have fun. Cause like when I was younger, like going to wrestling shows was like, I really didn't have much of a social life. Like I was working constantly. So it was me and my sister. That was our one night to just get dolled up and we'd go to wrestling shows together and like we'd hang out with everybody. And it was just the one time a month that I got to go and have a fun time, you know? So, I mean, it sucks that like whatever it is, whether it's wrestling or concerts or whatever, because I mean, I do, I'm a singer in a band as well. And like me not being able, yeah. Not being able to perform, you know, in a band and the live music scene, it's hard for me being a musician because I love performing and I love singing and it's kind of a passion.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people that like to go to these live shows and it brings a lot of joy. Like a lot of seniors come out and they love to dance with their, you know, their spouses and it's kind of like their time to get out and have a good time. So to kind of deprive people of that, it's like, it takes a toll on people mentally over time. Like, you know, missing a show or two is one thing, but like not being able to go for like 6, 7, 8 months is pretty hard on people. So I'm hoping that we can, I mean, like it's nice that RCW and some companies are choosing to run little spot shows, even if they are kind of limited, because it does give people some sort of outlet to kind of go somewhere. But yeah, like it's when I wrestled in Winnipeg, like it was the same rules, like hand sanitizer, masks, like social distancing, only 100 people, including staff members and stuff in the building. And it was like, it's a different type of wrestling show. And I'm sure you can understand where I'm coming from.
Yeah. It's a sort of a smaller scale and like, it's hot. It's one of those things where like last weekend, or last night I wrestled Dead Zone and I came out and I was doing my entrance and then I realized halfway through while I was making my entrance, oh, I'm not supposed to be high-fiving people or I'm going to get in trouble. You know, so I just kind of had to like stop doing that and try and make it seem like I'm not trying to be a dick to the people that I neglected to high five. But just one of those things where, you know, you don't even think about it once you're curtain and then you're just like doing your thing or whatever.
Yeah, it's like second nature. Like you just have your go-tos. Yeah, like in just Winnipeg, I like ran out the truck, ran into the venue and just went straight into the ring. Like, and I just did like a circle in the ring and did my like, hey guys, like from inside. But it's just like, you know, interacting with the crowd was different. And like, because everyone was so spaced out, you're like, where do I look? Like it was, yeah. Like, you know, if we get back to wrestling and it's still like that, it's going to be like different for, it's a learning curve for sure. But, you know, it's, I still liked being able to get back in the ring and wrestle at that point. It was still nice. And I, from like the fans that were there that I kind of spoke to from a distance, they said that, like, you know, as small as the show was, it was really enjoyable to kind of come out and do this again because they've missed it so much.
Right on. Who did you face in Winnipeg?
Actually, Miss Zwicker.
Oh, Alex Zwicker. She was, as of like this recording, she will be the person on the podcast a week before you. See, I'm trying to do like a women of wrestling type theme month here.
That's awesome.
I did Newfoundland month, and then I did BC month, and then I figured women of wrestling month would be a great idea. And then shit kind of hit the fan in women's wrestling. There was like the big speak out movement thing, and I was like, oh, is this really a good time for me to do a women of wrestling month? But, you know, like, it's an uncomfortable, like, topic and whatnot, and, like, I don't expect anyone to come on here and bury anyone, and that's not, like, really what the podcast is about or anything. But do you want to just give, like, your general opinion and thoughts on the whole situation?
Yeah, like, I chose, I don't, like, and I don't know if you looked at my social media or anything, I chose not to share my stories, in this regard, just because it was something that I wasn't prepared to really deal with. But it's definitely something that needed to happen. Like, it should have happened a long time ago. And these things really, they're just common sense things, like of how to treat your fellow colleagues and how to compose yourself in a locker room situation.
Yeah.
And it should be a fun environment. I mean, there should be, like, you know, respect and discipline and all those things that kind of have come through the business. Like, there should always be those kinds of things. But, you know, the sexual harassment stuff and the, like, you know, you're one of the boys, but you're not one of the boys because you're a chick kind of thing attitude should be something that's left in the past, you know? And I feel for all the girls that share their stories, and I support all of them. And I mean, when you see these things too, you see a lot of, it's unfortunate because some people use this platform to abuse it. And it, like, it makes the other people that actually have these stories coming through a much harder time, you know. And that's what we see even just in general with women coming forward about, you know, sexual harassment and assault claims in life, you know, like, a lot of women that actually have gone through this stuff don't come forward, especially right away, because they're scared of being re-victimized by the justice system, by, you know, colleagues, you know, and people don't believe them. So, I mean, you always want to use these movements to create change and positive momentum in that regard, to kind of, like, steer the ship in the right direction, and hopefully people go, okay, like, this is not acceptable behavior. It was never acceptable behavior, but we've put up with it too long, and now people need to see that these are the things that some of us have gone through, and that this, we don't want this to happen to the next generation. And that's what I've always told girls that I've kind of worked with that were younger than me or kind of just breaking in. I said, like, I'm here to help you guys navigate this as much as possible, because if I can save you some of the hardships that I went through, it would make me happy to have you avoid those things, because it wasn't easy for me to deal with that by myself. I didn't really have a female in my first, like, year kind of thing to kind of go to for advice or whatnot. And, like, when I came out here, I had Sexy Samantha kind of as a mentor, and, you know, she kind of told me her stories and kind of shared her experience with me, but you kind of learn things along the way. But unfortunately, yeah, like, I would say a lot of women in this business, especially from the previous, like, past years and even current, like, go through things that we just shouldn't have to put up with. And I think the girls that came out are courageous and brave, and I'm so glad that they felt that they could do that. Because I told them, I said, you guys are braver than I am, because I wasn't ready to revisit my past in that sense. And I chose to keep my stories to myself. But I mean, the other girls that did it, like, it definitely sparked some change, and people are starting to notice that there's some negativity that we can wipe out of the locker room.
Yeah, I think like the big lesson is just be a decent human being, because like
essentially, yeah.
I don't want to share a locker room with like creeps that are sexually harassing people and stuff, you know, like,
yeah,
I don't want to be around those kind of people.
No, exactly. But the thing is, yeah, it's like a devil in disguise, right? Like it's, yeah, people that, some of the people that like were kind of outed, allegedly they did all these things, right? Because again, of course, you're not going to say that everyone did everything. It's all allegedly until everything's proven. But, you know, they're people that you would have never expected. Some of them were people that you're like, I've wrestled this person, I've hung out with this person, we've gone out for drinks several times. You just don't see it coming. And that's the scary part about it. Cause again, anything in life, like if you look at, you know, any crime, like a murder or anything, like they could be your next door neighbor. Like they're not, we always expect people that do these things to be like these monstrosities of people that like, you could be like, that's a bad person. You could just pick them out, but it's not the case. Like they're, you know, you're Mr. Rogers kind of people sometimes. And they hide these things quite well, and they know how to not show their true colors to certain people. So that's the scary part, is like a lot of people, like you said, like don't want to hang out with these people, but more than likely at some point have.
Yeah.
And you would have never known it because maybe they weren't like that towards you, or that was in their past and they've kind of realized the error of their ways, which is, you know, good that at some point they go, okay, what I was doing was bad, but like, that doesn't make that what they did in the past to said people okay either, because they didn't really acknowledge that like there was no consequences to those negative actions for them, but there was consequences for the person they did it to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a sad situation, but it is like, I'm glad that it's kind of like come to light, so that like if people do like, you know, like you can't be pulling, you won't be able to pull that kind of nonsense in the locker room. Like, because people will see it and be like, hey, like, what are you doing? You know?
Yeah. Well, at least that's the other thing. Like, at least now people hopefully will go, that's not right. I'm going to say something, rather than go like, well, it's not my business, so I'm going to turn a blind eye. And then hopefully if, you know, if they want to talk, I'll be there for them. Yeah. And that's what you see a lot in these situations, is that like in the past, before it really comes out, is these people see this stuff happening to their colleagues, like they're, you know, whether they're female, male, whatever, they see these sexual encounters or these uncomfortable moments where a person like isn't maybe in a political position they feel to do something, or they don't know how to handle the situation, or you know, they're just like uncomfortable and go kind of into like a shock situation, and because no one goes like, hey dude, or what are you guys doing, like that's wrong, they don't, you know, the person goes like, well, I'm uncomfortable, but maybe nobody else is because no one's saying anything. So maybe I should keep this to myself. And that's kind of the problem with society, is that we're too busy filming people doing bad things rather than coming out and saying, what you're doing is wrong. Don't do this. Right. Like everybody films these, yeah, really negative things happening when they're, and no one's stopping,
yeah,
like these people from doing them.
Put your camera down and jump in.
Yeah. Like I'd have a hard time. Yeah, I'd have a hard time watching something like that and like not doing something. Like I was driving home from work one night, and it was like, I don't know, like 10 p.m. And I saw someone just come right out of nowhere and like jump this girl.
No.
Yeah, like it looked like they knew each other, but like it, like this poor girl had like two backpacks on. She like, and she's like bundled up. She like didn't know. Like she was in no position to protect herself. She was just taking a beating. So like I stopped the car and I rolled my window down. I was like, what's going on? And then the other, I didn't see who it was, but they just bolted. And I was getting honked at. So I tried to turn around. The other girl ran across the street, and I like drove in circles for like 5 to 10 minutes trying to find her to make sure she was okay. Like if she needed a ride to a hospital or any of that stuff, like, you know, maybe if I had just kept driving, like she would have beaten her up more. Like, I don't know, but I couldn't like watch somebody do that to someone that was unable to protect themselves, you know. But that's just that's kind of how I am. Like, I'm not saying that I haven't, you know, maybe walked past things in the past, because I think we sometimes don't know how to deal with situations and you kind of learn. But I think now that I'm a bit older, I try to do my best and intervene when I think something's being done that's wrong. You know, we're not all perfect, but I try to do the best I can in those situations.
Yeah, and I mean, like, in wrestling, there is a lot of, like, you know, keep your eyes or your ears open and your mouth shut kind of thing. Like, there's a lot of that, but, let's move on and talk about something a little more pleasant.
Yes.
You actually are probably the... Other than Sexy Sam, who you mentioned earlier, are probably the most, like, tenured competitor in women's wrestling in Alberta. Like, you're one of the most experienced women that's currently active.
Yeah.
How long have you been wrestling for?
I guess this year would be, like, 8 years wrestling. Like, I started training in 2011. And... was reffing for 2011 and kind of did some managerial stuff at the beginning of my career. And then I had my first, like, official match. Like, technically my first match was, like, before in 2011, but, like, I really wasn't overly trained at that point. It was kind of like on a reservation up north with Kathy Cougar. And then I started training with Mentolo in Winnipeg at the CWE Wrestling Academy.
Solid.
Yeah. And, so I mean, my first official train match after kind of going through some form of a camp was February 8th of 2012, and I did the Northern Tour for the first time.
Oh,
and
that's the Tony Condello thing, where you guys basically, like, just trudge through the winter of, like, the crazy north, and you have to drive over lakes and stuff.
All that stuff. All that, like, that was pretty much, like, my first, like, experience, like, I don't know, like, it's an eye-opener just to, like, what the business and the road can be like at its, like, in some of the worst conditions. Because I mean, like, the people I traveled with were great. Like, I had some really great people on the tour, and it really made it so much more fun. Like, there was obviously sleepless nights, and, like, you're sleeping on gym mats, and, like, you're wrestling twice a night sometimes, and but, like, the people is kind of what makes the trip enjoyable. And I had there's a guy named Adam Kraft. He works out in the East Coast. And, you know, he really tried to help me as much as he could. Like, if he saw something, he would, like, watch my match and kind of give me advice. When there was, like, a double day we could keep the ring up, he would get in there and train with me. And he had a friend. His name was John Kramer. I don't think he's active anymore. But I learned a lot from those two. And me and Bambi Hall kind of grew up in the business at the beginning together. So... we were learning from each other at the same time.
Yeah, Bambi Hall, she's out of BC, right?
Yes.
Yeah. That was, like, your first tour? That was, like, an early experience for you, eh?
That was, yeah, like, my first pretty much everything.
Oh, wow. Like, I've heard stories that they're pretty treacherous sometimes.
But yeah.
Like you say, like, I mean... There's been some long car rides for me, but not nearly as long as any that have probably happened for you. But it is 100%, like, who you're riding with that makes it a good time, you know?
Absolutely.
With you, you're wrestling in Alberta. When did you start working here in the province?
Well, I was approached at a Comic-Con. I was actually dealing with my first concussion.
Oh, no.
At the time. Yeah. And so I was doing a little bit of managerial stuff because I was, like, the tail end of my recovery. I was feeling a bit better, but, like, not necessarily clear to be, like, bumping and, like, rattling my brain around a lot. I was in training, and I took, like, a shoulder to the, like, basically to the eye area. And it, like, flung me back, and, like, I popped up, and, like, I did, like, something really small, but then I was, like, head spins and, like, couldn't see clearly, and, like, I lied down, and, like, we were in Brickhouse Gym, which is Paul Taylor's gym in Winnipeg, and he had a bag of cranberries in the freezer. So Mentolo's partner there went out, she got me the cranberries. I had them all over my, like, on my face. And I remember, like, going to my parents picked me up. We went to the hospital. And because there's no mirrors there, like, I couldn't really see what my face looked like. But it was, like, black and blue on one side of my face. It was just so gnarly. And, yeah, it was, like, the first time I'd been, like, completely, like, because I had had my bell rung. Like, I've been hit hard and, like, felt loopy for a second. But, like, that was my first, like, oh, my God, like, I can't even stand up. And so after a week, I thought I was, like, feeling better. And so I tried to go to the gym and I grabbed a skipping rope and I did two jumps and then I almost like passed out. I was like, nope. So I had to have someone pick me up. But near about 3 to 4 weeks later, I was doing this Comic-Con and I was approached by Vance Nevada, who's now out of BC as well.
Okay, yeah.
And, yeah, and he just said like, hey, I have an opportunity for, we need a girl to come out to Alberta and like maybe train out there, and there's more opportunities. Like I have the CNWA coming up, and so I, you know, weighed out my options and I said, you know, like I'm young at this point, like it's the best time to kind of do these kinds of things. And he's like, just come out for a week, train with Massive Damage at MPW at the school there, and then come on the road and we'll do like a quick tour. Like I think it was about 10 dates if I'm not mistaken, maybe a little bit less. But I came out, trained with Massive and stuff for a week, and I just really liked the environment at the time. Like, I really liked who I trained with. I liked who the CWA had on their roster. So, like, we all kind of clicked as a crew. Yeah. And I felt like, for me, this was, like, the best decision at the time for me to kind of move away from Winnipeg and start, like, I don't know, testing the waters in other, like, other places. So, yeah, I guess, like, I was actually 2012 and I moved out here August 31st of 2012 was my official move date. And then I've been here ever since. And then I moved to Ontario briefly for like a few months. And yeah.
Yeah, I seem to recall like a few years ago, I think it was you and Bobby Sharp moved off to Ontario for a little while.
Yeah, we were there. We were doing the Scott DeMore's camp, and Johnny Devine was the head trainer at the time.
Oh, how did that go?
It was intense. It was good though. Like, Johnny is like a hard knocks guy, but he's to the point. The drills were good. Scott has so much knowledge to offer as well. Like, just with his background in like as a wrestler, as well as a promoter and a producer and a writer and all the things that he's done. So
yeah, he's heavily involved in Impact Wrestling.
Yes, he is. You know, and it was cool. Like, I mean, we met some really good people out there, like A1 and like Joe Doring was out there, and he, you know, you get to train with those people. That's where I met Moose for the first time too. So, and got to hang out with him. I actually wrestled him in camp. We had a practice match together where I was the heel, so it was interesting to be like a female heel that is like half the size of this 6'6" 299 pound monster.
Yeah, Moose is a big fella.
He's a big guy. So it was like fighting a mountain essentially. But I was like, you know what, I'm gonna use my psychology in this. And like, I'm not weak either. So like, I'm not like, you know, I pride myself on like my whole strong woman aspect of my gimmick, you know? So let's just use like bits and pieces of this and sprinkle them in. And he was really good at kind of working with me in that sense too. Cause I mean, I think it was a new experience for him. Like usually again, when he's worked a female, it was like, she's the baby face. So, yeah, that was, it was an interesting camp, but like, it was very structured. It was about 4 months and, yeah, I had a great time. I learned a lot of stuff and I really kind of, met a lot of people, and I wrestled in LA and I wrestled, all over the place. I was doing extra work for WWE at the time too. Like it was a really good time. And, yeah, like I really, really enjoyed doing that. And I think I needed that somewhere in my career too.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Is there any like notable episodes of Monday Night Raw we can go back and just like spot you in the background?
No, so like yeah, the time I was in Buffalo, because it was sometimes they bring you in and they don't end up using you kind of thing. Like, I know it sounds weird, but like, that's kind of what we were brought. Like, we don't really know what we were there for, but it didn't end up panning out the way they expected it to. So we just kind of were kind of meeting people and talking to people backstage and stuff in that situation. So they weren't really doing any of the, like, the Congo lines and all that stuff at the time.
Yeah, they had the, what was it, the Rosebuds or whatever? The life.
Yeah, so I think, yeah, so that might have been, like, either post, I think that was post Rosebuds. And then, yeah, like, there really wasn't anything like that going on at that time when I was out there, so.
Do you have any cool stories about while you were in, while you were working extra work for WWE? Like, did you get to, like, shake hands with The Undertaker or anything cool like that?
No, I mean, it was really, well, so I've met Chris Jericho a couple times now, and he's just, like, for me, he's my idol. Like, he's the person I probably looked up to the most in my career. And I've met quite a few people that I'm absolutely enamored with, but I can talk to them. Like, I've been able to, like, sit down with Edge and or Adam and have these conversations and, like, pick his brain and, like, joke around. But, like, every time I meet Chris, I'm just like, bleh. Like, I can't do it. So he was there that day, and I was standing in the extras area, actually catering, and he comes up to me and he's like, hello, I'm Chris. And I just was like, hi, you know. And I just couldn't. Yeah, like, I don't get like that with most people, but he's someone that, like, I've put on this pedestal for me. Just because he's accomplished so much. He's kind of like a hometown hero too. Like, he's from Winnipeg, which is where I'm from, so maybe that has more to do with it. But, like, I think it's also because he's a musician and so am I, and so there's a lot more things that I kind of emulate with him, or like I kind of like, what is it, connect with more with him just because of all those things. But, like, you know, with the CACs, I've gotten to meet numerous people that I looked up to, and one of them, actually, my great grandfather was friends with way back when they were running shows in Winnipeg with AWA. So I never got the chance to meet him, and he's the Baron von Raschke. He's quite old at this point. So I was really worried that I wouldn't get to meet him, and he was really good friends with my great grandfather. So he won an award two or three years ago at the CAC. So I got to sit with him at his table and talk to him. And it was a really cool moment for me then.
And for those that don't know, the CAC, that's the Cauliflower Alley Club, right?
Yes, it is.
That's solid. Alex was saying that she got to go to that too.
Yeah, like,
how did you end up going to that? Did you wrestle on the shows? Because apparently, like, they put on shows and stuff.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, I've been on the shows every time I've been there. I think I've been there, like, five times now. And usually, like, I do, you know, Team Canada versus Team USA. I've done, like, a gauntlet match there, too. I kind of get married to Andrea the Giant. We've had quite a few interactions together. That woman has a devastating chop.
Andrea the Giant. I honestly, this is the first I'm hearing of Andrea the Giant. That is a fantastic wrestling name for like a large giant. Is she a giant woman?
She's got to be six something. Like, she's got to be. She's not short by any means. But yeah, she wears like this chain like bodice kind of thing, and I like love the woman. Yeah, like, I just remember, like, she had me in the corner, and she just, like, full palm chopped me, and I was just like, like, it was, yeah, it was great, because it was impossible not to want to, like, flop around like a fish, because it was a bit, like, I mean, I love that kind of stuff, I welcome it, but I've wrestled her quite a few times for Vendetta Pro, which is, Billy Blade runs the shows at the CACs there, and, honestly, always have a fun time. I've worked a lot with the Ballard brothers there too, and they're kind of like these twin brothers in, I believe they're from California, if I'm not mistaken. And like, they do like a Team Canada gimmick, which is nice. So they're always kind of paired up with us or their managers and stuff like that. So yeah, the CAC is a great place to like network, meet people, that's where I met RVD for the first time, and like I really connected with him. Like we spoke quite a bit the first time, and like I wanted to get an autograph for a friend.
You spoke quite a bit, or you smoked quite a bit?
Oh no, no, I spoke. Sorry, spoke. I'm gonna emphasize the "p" on that. Yeah, I'm not much of a smoker myself. But no, yeah, we spoke, and Fonzie was there too. His manager. Cool. Yeah, so like I wanted to get an autograph for a friend's kid of RVD, and because I told him I had spoken to him, and I said, well, I haven't seen him since like yesterday, but I'll try to connect with him. And he had already left, but he went to a friend's place in LA, and Fonzie was still in the hotel, and he said, I'll text you when he gets here to pick me up tomorrow, and then we'll see what he can do. So I was like, great. And so I met him down the lobby, and I just kind of explained, hey, it's like my friend's kid. He really likes you and he wants to get an autograph. And he's like, yeah, sure. He just signed a bunch of pictures for me. And we talked about his world record. And we talked for like another 20, 30 minutes at the back of his car and by his trunk. And just like a super, super nice guy. He ended up calling me on Fonzie's phone like 20 minutes to 30 minutes later, saying he was like really nice to meet me. And like, I just remember being so stoked that, you know, I was important enough to kind of like call and be told like, hey, like you're a really good person. I really liked meeting you and hanging out with you. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's got to be cool.
Yeah, I was like year and a half in at that point. So I was still in the moment of like, oh my God, this is so cool.
You were with the CNWA for a while, and it sounds like you were in MPW for a little while, too. What inspired you to switch over and join the PWA?
That's a tough situation to kind of talk about. Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah. Oh, no, that's okay. I mean, I don't know how to really word it properly. I mean, I still love everyone there. I mean, most people that I knew from there are not there anymore from my recollection, but like I still respect everybody there that's there right now. And Sam, like I said, she kind of mentored me for like the first couple of years there, and I've created a really good like relationship with her. So and you know, Massive has done a great job running that company for however many years, but you know, it was just, I think for me, the best way to put it is it was time for me to kind of move forward and do something different. It had nothing to do with like anyone there, that's there now that made me make that decision. And I think Bobby too was thinking of moving, and because we were in, like boyfriend and girlfriend at the time, it was kind of like a collective decision to, you know, expand our horizons, wrestle different people, kind of start to grow as individuals. And again, I was still pretty green too at that time, so I really didn't know where I was going with things, and I really wanted to like wrestle different girls or guys, and it's just what needed to be done at that point.
Okay. Did you wrestle for RCW
before you went to PWA? Yeah, that's where I went to, actually, right after MPW. I switched to RCW. And I believe I became the first RCW women's champion.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I don't know how I want to say that that's true, but I mean, someone could correct me on that, but we had a 5-woman, match. It was me, Kathy Huger, Bambi Hall, Giselle Shaw. And I want to say it was Violet was the other girl.
Oh, one of the twin girls from BC.
Yes. Yes. Again, my memory is like, I know Giselle, Kathy Huger, and Bambi for sure. And I'm pretty sure it was Violet, but my memory might be a little off at that point because it was a few years ago. But, yeah, so I went there, and I was there till I went to Windsor, in Ontario there. And then I came back and we went to PWA.
Oh, okay. So what are your thoughts on some of the current women that are sort of the ones that are around wrestling now, like girls like Zoe Sager and, you know, Kylie Morgan, and Alex Rickard. Are those the three girls you wrestled in the Saddle Dome? Were you at that show?
Yes, yes.
Yeah? And what are your thoughts on those ladies and whatnot?
Well, I like that we're seeing more women in the sport. And like they've all got a diversified style, you know, that's very different from mine. So for me, it's nice to have that diversity to work with. And because, you know, most of my career, I was wrestling men for a good chunk of my career. And I wrestled like Sexy Samantha on countless occasions, Bambi Hall on countless occasions. So it's nice to kind of like, you know, go into these matches and kind of like every couple of months you're wrestling someone new, or even sometimes every month you're wrestling someone different, because you start to like develop. But it's also nice to kind of work with differences of style so you can grow a little bit more yourself. So that's what I like about the girls right now. Like, it's just that you're seeing, you know, a lot of girls do outside the box stuff, and it's really interesting to see how the scene's growing.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on, obviously you've taken part in it, so you can't like have a problem with it, but what are your thoughts on like intergender wrestling, and like, do you handle an intergender match differently than you would a match between you and another girl?
Yes and no. I think like intergender wrestling is a touchy subject in some ways, but like, I think when I first started doing it, I definitely did. And I think it should actually be very different. Like, if it's like a girl that's wrestling a guy for the first time in a place where she's established as a female only wrestler, she should treat it differently because she's not established as that. You know, people go like, it's about like smoke and mirrors and believability, right? So if, you know, you're not able to beat all the females, but all of a sudden you can beat the guy, it kind of just takes away that mystique around it. Yeah. You know, if that makes sense. So the way I built my intergender aspect of my career was done kind of like slowly through time. But I also, like, because of my size and because of my strength background, it was never completely outlandish for me to fight a guy, especially if they were like a smaller guy. So a lot of the guys that I started working with when I was younger were like average size guys. They weren't like these, like, again, it wasn't like moose size guys where they're 6'6", yeah, 300 pounds, which I mean, pretty monstrous for me to kind of tackle that as a fight. But yeah, like I developed that. And that's kind of why going back to female wrestling, especially from the fans' perspective, I always try to, I don't know, still act the same, because I don't want to be like all like fluffy and dainty when I'm wrestling women. Yeah. and all brutish when I'm wrestling men. In general, I try to be aggressive and be like cat, like that. I flip that switch on once I get in the ring, whether it's a female or a male. I just, the males and stuff, we kind of interact differently than I do with females. Just because obviously there's some, like, if you're doing a comedy match, there's different things you can do with a guy than you can do with a female. But yeah, like it is a sticky one, because I see a lot of intergender stuff now where like the girl's like 100 pounds going up against a 300 pound guy. And don't get me wrong, athletically, absolutely incredible, right? But as someone that had a minor background in jiu-jitsu and like I did amateur wrestling and stuff, there's just, for me, it kind of takes away from it, because like I already kind of know how hard that would actually be to do in reality, you know.
Yeah, that's probably why the UFC has, like, you know, not only like their own women's division, but there's also like weight divisions within.
Yeah,
like, you know, you don't see the large super heavyweight people wrestling against the small little featherweight people. Like,
no. Well, that, and it's different styles, right? Like, I mean, I think like one of my favorite opponents like of all time is Giselle. Me and her had really good chemistry, but what I really liked about wrestling Giselle was that it was like David and Goliath, but not like, she was an athletic David, you know what I mean? She was a really athletic girl, and she wasn't short, she was tall still. So like, even though I was bigger and brutish, it was a good combo because she could, like, it was really aggressive, but from different angles. Like, I was always, like, the power, and she was the high flyer. But there was still, like, that, I don't know, like, that intangible, I can't really put a word, like, there's, it's hard, like, a lot of people have told me about me and her, and, like, the matches we've had, there's just, like, that something that me and her had, when we went up against each other. And, but that the whole point of wrestling is the diversity, is, like, wrestling different people, and, like, adopting stuff, like, you know, picking up things as you kind of go with these different people. But I also really like one opponent, like, I didn't get to wrestle her a lot, but I actually talked about this with Spencer. It was like Rhea Von Slasher out of BC. Okay. Love it. Like, I've been trying to make matches with her happen. Like, I, when I was working RCW, I was like, you know, Rhea, like, I would love to wrestle her again, just cause it was always so aggressive, and, you know, it was a lot of fun wrestling her. She's and she's got more experience than me too, so she's got a wealth of knowledge to share with people.
Go out to Vancouver Island and wrestle her?
No, like, she, we wrestled in CNWA together.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then I wrestled her. The last time I wrestled her was, I think, well, no, maybe it might have been in Alberta, but, like, I know the last match I have footage of was in Kelowna.
I saw her wrestle Chelsea Green in Victoria.
Oh, okay, awesome.
Yeah, I was, like, helping out at one of the VIPW shows, and Chelsea Green gave her a Hurricane Rana, like, right in front of my sound table, and, you know, like, at that time, I was just pretty much a fan, so I was pretty impressed by it.
Yeah, like, Rhea's, like, I liked her because our styles are very similar. And I just, I really enjoy working against her in matches. And it's just sad that it hasn't happened more. Yeah. So, yeah, hopefully that'll, you know, happen more in my final years of my career.
Are you like, considering, like, winding down your career soon?
Nothing's for sure. I mean, I think our bodies, the way I always put it is, we all have a bump card. You know, you keep taking stamps out of it, and eventually your body just goes, like, you just can't anymore. I mean Edge is a good example, but I mean, like, who's to say that he was able to come back, right? But a lot of people that had the same injury as he had, that was it, like, they were done after that. Yeah. You know, so I mean, with me doing, a lot of people don't know, like, my life history, you know, outside of wrestling. Like, when I was younger, I was hit by two minivans on my bike. You know, I mean, when I was young, I was like, again, I'm built. So, I mean, those things don't affect me as much as maybe a smaller person, but that's not to say that it didn't do damage to my body. And that was before wrestling. And then when I moved out here, I was driving downtown Edmonton, kind of exploring the city, and I got smoked by a semi, you know, in my car. Again, luckily outside of wrestling, I mean, I've wrestled, I can't even count how many matches right now. Like, I have wrestled quite a bit in my time as well, and traveled, and I've had injuries, and I've had, you know, at least 8 concussions in my day. So eventually your body just says, like, eh. And then I played sports too. Like, I played, like, I was competitive in 11 sports. Oh, wow. In my life. Yeah. Like, again, wrestling wasn't, like, the only thing I ever really did. I started out as a 5-pin bowler, though, so that's not exactly the most aggressive sport in the world, but I did compete in that for 15 years, I'll have people know. I'm quite proud of my bowling career. But, you know, I was always someone that struggled with weight because of, like, medical issues, and because of a lot of people, again, don't know this, but I had an eating disorder when I was younger. I really have a bad relationship with food. And yeah, like, I don't have a good relationship with food. I used to, oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, I'm not the kind of person that would, like, cast any judgment on anyone for the, you know, if they're a little chunky or whatever. Cause, like, I'm obviously not walking around here like a chiseled Adonis, you know?
Yeah. And that's the thing too, is that we're not all supposed to necessarily be, like, walking around with 6-packs and stuff. Like, a lot of people really don't understand how bodies work.
Yeah.
but are quick to judge. Like, they don't know the whole story, but they're like, why are you not ripped and jacked and huge? Like, you know, and it's like, well, like, do you really know where I come from? Like, I mean, I was never going to be 130 pounds. Like, my body structure is not, like, for me to be 130 pounds, I would look like I'm sick and dying.
Emaciated.
And that's the thing. People go, and people, some people think 130 is heavy, you know, but it's just, if you understand how bodies work, genetics work, like, I was always someone that I grew up on, like, my dad was a very physical guy. So, I mean, I was helping him re-shingle roofs when I was like 8.
Yeah.
I was lifting like washer and dryers up staircases with him. Like, I was doing labor when I was a kid, you know? So I was always like built, and that's what I, as an adult, chose to celebrate, is that while I might not be small and tiny and like whatever, I'm capable of doing a lot of things that most females and heck some males can't do. And everything that I've kind of chosen to do in my life, compete in, or I've always done well in it. Like, I've always accomplished it. Like, when I did bodybuilding, I went and I did 3 competitions and I did well. Yes, when I did... I
saw a picture of you from, like, in some kind of bodybuilding competition, and I was like, holy cow. Like, I was amazed that it was the same person.
Yeah, and, like, and again, like, that's a part of my life, but it's not, like, it was hard for me. Like, my body, was rejected a lot of that stuff along the way, again, because my eating disorder was prior to that. So I was still trying to, I mean, to this day, I'm still trying to fix the damage that was done by doing that stuff to myself. Because, again, there's just a lack of education for people to really understand nutrition and everything. But, I mean, like, in music, like, I've performed with the Winnipeg Symphony Orchestra, I've recorded albums, you know, being in a band, like I decided to get into strongman 2 years ago. And man, there's like so many amazing women and men in the sport that I don't even hold a candle to. But like, you know, I set out to try competing. Like, I was like, let's, you know, I like training with these people. I like doing this stuff. Let's just jump in, do a competition, see how I do, you know. And I podiumed all 3 times.
Well, congratulations. That's really good.
Thank you. Yeah. So like, that's why I tell people, like, you know, when you, there's so many people, again, I'm not going to name names, that really like to like lay it on thick and be like, you don't look the way you should, or you don't look the way you, I think you should look, or really underestimate a person because of like how they look, when really they should go like, what has this person done, or what can they do? And when they like, just when you assume people can't do stuff because of how they look or whatever, it just, to me, it just is a poor, it's a character flaw. I mean, I try to look at everybody as like, we're all kind of on an even playing field, and we all have different passions and different lives, and we try to grow and improve ourselves as we learn these lessons.
And I think that's like one of the good things about like wrestling. I mean, more so on the indies rather than like the WWE, where the, you know, the WWE does have like a certain look and style to pretty much all their wrestlers. But like, you know, variety is the spice of life. So, you know, you want to have like a really big, huge, muscled up moose guy, and you want to have like, you know, a couple of fat dudes, and you want to have like a bunch of like small athletic people, you know. Like, if everybody just looked the same and wrestled the same, it would be pretty boring.
And that's the thing, like, it's just, yeah, like, people need to like respect diversity, and to like, I don't know, like, if it doesn't affect you, like, don't be talking crap about it. You know, there's lots of that going around. I mean, that's a lot of stuff in the wrestling business. Again, we all kind of keep hush hush about. But yeah, like, I just tell people, like, I don't really look at a person and go like, oh, you can't do this, there's no way you can do this, because then they blow me out of the water and I'm like, holy smokes. Right. I mean, which is nice. But at the same time, like, if that person heard that I said those kinds of things, like, what would that do to their confidence? You know, and how would that make them feel if they found out someone who was either in a veteran situation or whatever would make them feel like a piece of crap? And that's not how, I don't want to ever make people feel like that, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, think we should
it's not cool to be like just judgmental. I mean,
yeah,
it's all right to offer like criticism if you're trying to help somebody improve. But yeah, there's, you know, nobody is above anyone else. You know?
No. Like, yeah. It's, yeah, I try to like, right? Like, yeah, well, we should all just respect each other as colleagues as well. I mean,
work hard and you're dedicated and whatnot. Like, who's to say, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that. Like, I mean, I've actually, like, even last week we were in, I've been going to Heavy Metals Wrestling Camp, right?
Yeah, I've seen that, yeah.
And he got us to do this crazy thing where you jump up onto the middle rope and then you jump off and you give the person an arm drag. And you do this from like a run, right? And I was like, oh my God, there's no way I'll be able to do this. And I did it like 6 times. And by the end of it, it was like, oh, I actually don't feel like this was all that difficult at all, you know? Like, and it's one of those things where I think if I ever busted out on a show, people will be like, holy shit, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and like the biggest thing is like your own self-doubt, right? Like your mind is the one that puts up that wall. And prevents you from doing it. But like where other people come in is when you have like a really negative like person either in your coaching area or in your like immediate colleague pool that is like they're judging you. That's where people's blocks go up higher, I find. Yeah. So I, you know, there's being constructive and being like, you know, hey dude, like pull it together. Like, you know, if you're trying though, like if you're someone that's like really like you've tried and like even if you failed like 5 times but you're like gonna keep trying to do this, like I see, like I respect that a lot, you know, because not everybody's meant to do everything and sometimes your brain has this like fear of landing on your head and it just, no matter how much you want to get over it, it just is so hard to break past. Your mind is so strong that it can literally stop you or get you to do almost anything.
I find like having the support like of people who are like, no, you can do this, like just go for it and do it. And then like you know, I find that the support and building people up is more effective than tearing people down. You know
what I mean? 100%. Yeah, that makes the learning environment like much more positive and like, yeah, like it's where you see the most. I mean, like you need those moments of like, yeah,
you
gotta a
know
butt
what
kick.
You fucked up.
Yeah, you need a, you know, like you need a kick in the butt sometimes, but at the same time, like, you know, that whole positive reinforcement over negative, like the negative side is always going to, you're always going to see someone grow better. And then like, they're more positive. So then they end up like the atmosphere is better, you know, cause then everybody's happy and like having a good time and learning at the same time. Like they're like, I'm learning, I'm growing. And I really like the environment that I'm in. And you see the progression of people that way more so than the people that are like, you suck, why are you here? Like some people need that, like some people learn that way, but I find that it really does a lot to your mental psyche. Yeah. When that's kind of always around in the back of your head.
Definitely. Like I've been criticized, you know, like all wrestlers, but like even like one time I, you know, just it was like, oh, you suck, you're terrible, and like there was no this is why and this is how to fix it. It was just you suck.
Yeah.
It was like, it was motivating in the fact that, well, you know, I'm going to work hard and try and change this person's mind.
Yeah.
But it was also, you know, really disheartening.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like being that I've seen you like in the camps when I was like, when I came out those days after work and stuff like that, like from my perspective, I've seen you work really hard and I have all the respect in the world for how much work you've put into growing as a performer. Like I, even though I'm not always around you, like I can tell that you're trying super hard and like I have an immense amount of respect for you in that sense.
Yeah. I mean, I appreciate that. I wasn't like fishing for compliments or anything.
No, I mean, like I just tell people that like when, you know, credit where credit is due, you know, like if I see someone busting their butt, you know, you deserve that recognition because that's what's going to like that's what's going to improve you, you know, is going to those camps and doing those things for yourself and growing as an individual. So, I mean, like I said, I've seen you even in the camps. We've had a couple days together. Yeah. And I was like, wow, like this guy's like trying really hard. Like it was really impressive for me to see from you. Cause I mean, I see you, like I'll come to the RCW show, like stand in the back and see you, or like I've talked to you outside of wrestling. Pardon me. But, you know, that was the first time we were like in a ring setting together, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I saw you work your butt off. So that was really cool to see.
Yeah. Well, I enjoy it too. I mean, there's some exercises and drills and stuff that are just like, you know, they're rough on me, but it's just, you got to go in and get it done. And, you know, that's that. And you'll be better for it. You know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger type thing.
Absolutely.
So do you have any idea of when your next show that you are going to be wrestling on is going down?
Nothing like 100% official. Like, I believe I have a show potentially in October, but like there's definitely opportunities before then that I haven't really like locked in. There's a show in Winnipeg, potentially August 22nd.
Oh, yeah.
Supposed
to be on that show.
I think we're on that show together. So outside of that, I mean, I've been had offers roll in. I just haven't, like, locked anything in at this point.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Okay, so potentially August the 22nd is in Winnipeg. For the, what's it, the Christian National Wrestling Federation?
That's the one.
Okay. Have you wrestled for those guys before?
No, like they're kind of, from what I've heard, they've kind of like, they just do like pop-up shows from time to time.
Okay.
Yeah. Cause they're more charity events.
Yeah. That's an interesting thing. Cause like, Winnipeg, that's kind of like, Danny's territory. And then there's a couple of other, federations over there and stuff. And from what I hear, they don't really have like, you know how, like, in Edmonton and Calgary, we have, like, this kind of line in the sand where if you're a PWA guy, you don't wrestle for RCW or vice versa. And, you know, MPW guys don't exchange. What are your thoughts on that sort of thing? I mean, especially, like, with there being such a, like, a small number of female wrestlers in the province, like, how do you think that affects your career?
It's a sticky one, I guess. Like, I mean, I understand where they come from a business perspective, right? Because you want, like, to have, like, you know, this gold star and, like, you can only see this guy here or this girl here. And, but at some point, too, when there's only, like, one show a month or whatever, and we're independent contractors, like, it kind of just limits the talent from growing and not so much, like, the company is benefiting from that. So, I mean, I see it from the business side of things, like why they do it. Because, I mean, Manitoba used to be like that. A lot of places were like that. But I also understand it from the worker's point of view where it's like, well, I mean, as much as I mean, I do really like working here. But, like, you know, I'm only doing two shows a month and I have like two other weekends and maybe they have a part-time job. So they want to make money and they want to grow as an individual, which is why we've seen a lot of people like, that were young in their career up and leave in Alberta. And I think that's why, because like they were kind of stuck and they weren't really feeling like they could, you know, do stuff. But Manitoba really isn't like that anymore. Ontario, they share talent in the same city all the time. BC, as far as they know, like there might be some stuff, but again, most people kind of share talent there. So, I mean, maybe we're just not at that part of the evolutionary process in terms of sharing talent, but especially with women, like there's so few of us that I always kind of hoped that there could be some arrangement made where like we're able to kind of like, not maybe not all the time, but every so often we do an angle with another promotion's female so that, you know, there's always matches for the girls rather than like, hey, you know, we have three girls, only two of you can wrestle this month. And it's like, not that that's happening right now, but like, you know, in the past, I've seen that happen. It's just like this way, you know, if there's one girl sitting out and there's one girl in another company who's working a guy, you know, that's a perfect spot. Be like, hey, you know what? You can borrow her for the next 6 months, do an angle, you know? So I'd like to see it grow to that. And who knows if it will, but yeah, it's just, it's such a sticky kind of topic because it's really, up to the promoters and up to the talent to kind of speak up if they want things to kind of go in that direction. Because that's what happened in a lot of places where, you know, it was like how it is here. And then people were just like, listen, like, we're all like not doing this, or we want to see change, or like, how can we make this work for both of us? And then eventually it kind of worked out, you know, and it kind of goes back and forth. But I think eventually we'll get to that point, hopefully, where, you know, we're just independent contractors and we can work a little bit more flexibly with each other. Because, I mean, that's how we all grow as performers and how we all get better, is by like building those relationships and wrestling different people.
100%. So we have gone for just over an hour here, so I'd like to wrap this up.
Yeah.
I'm going to wrap it up with a good one that Spencer asked me when he interviewed me. Who are the top three Alberta people that you would like to get in the ring with? And, you know, it could be a man, woman, just like three people you've wanted to wrestle but just haven't had the opportunity.
Oh, my goodness. That is tough. Well, I have never worked like a singles program, anything with heavy metal. So I think that would be fun, like an interesting match. So I think I'd say that for sure. And yeah, I think we'd have a pretty, like, I think we'd have a pretty good match. Like, I haven't wrestled. I don't think I've wrestled Jess one-on-one either. He is a beast though. Yes, I've worked with him in a Rhino seminar. Oh, wow. And yeah, it was an interesting day, but I'd like a rematch, I suppose.
That must be and, where he learned to do the spear, from Rhino.
No, I think he was already doing it at that point. But their match was really good. Like, I really enjoyed Big Jess versus Rhino. That was a really good match to watch.
Really solid. I'd love to see that. That would be amazing.
I'd imagine there's footage of it somewhere, because it was so cool to watch. It was really, really good, and Jess was really in his element, and Terry's a really good guy to learn from, and he's got endless experience in the ring. Like, he's just like a wealth of knowledge. I would say he's probably one of my favorite seminars that I've ever done in my career.
Yeah. Did you do the Al Snow one?
No, I didn't get to do that. I want to say I was out of town for it, or I couldn't get off of my shoot job. There was something where I couldn't do it, because I really wanted. I've talked to Al in Vegas before, but I've always wanted to do kind of like a learning thing with him.
I was eavesdropping on it, and it was like some good information. Back then, I was just like the ring announcer, so
yeah, he's
I was there, and yeah, he seemed like a fountain of knowledge, and was super cool too. Like, just
very, yeah, he's. Yeah, he's a cool guy, easy to talk to, very informative. Like, he's a great person to learn from. That's why I was kind of like choked that I couldn't make it. I don't even remember when it was, but I remember there being something where, like, when I found the date, I was like, ugh, I was so disappointed. But yeah, I'd say, like, I don't know, it's tough because, like, I've wrestled, you know what, Chris Steele. I've kind of worked with him a little bit when he was with Duke Durango. When him and Bobby and Clark were having tag team matches, but I was just managing on the outside of the ring, really. And I worked him a little bit in a tag program when I think Clark wasn't there or Bobby wasn't there. I can't remember. God, my memory is not good anymore. Yeah, I think like I'd like to wrestle Chris Steele. Yeah. So
heavy metal, Big Jess and Chris Steele. Yeah, that's definitely a good lineup right there.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's all. I mean, I've worked all the girls in Alberta. I think
wrestled Gigi Ray yet?
Oh, I guess not. I guess I haven't. She's been working a program with Zoe. Yeah. I'd like to work with her eventually. I think that it's tough to like narrow everything down, but I really like having those intense matchups, and I think like I've always wanted to get in the ring with those guys in the past, and like Gigi's like probably on like in the female department, like the next on the docket right now. I'm going through Taryn.
Oh, poor Taryn.
Yeah, I know. She's got her work cut out for her, but you know, I see her working her butt off.
Oh, she's always at camp, like,
yeah,
most of the time. Yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, she's awesome in that sense for sure. So right now I'm going through Taryn, and like I've gone through most of the other girls. Yeah, Gigi, I think just, oh god, she showed up a few months ago, and like she's got like I thought I seen her have like an amateur wrestling background, so it'd be cool. I don't know how true that is, just kind of what I've heard. It would be cool to kind of have that little bit of a dynamic in the match for sure. Yeah, but
she's like weirdly like really like a natural, like, because she's started at those force camps, right?
Yeah.
And like MRB will show her something and she'll just nail it like perfect first time, and that happens a lot with her.
Yeah, some people are just like they're able to like see something and do it, like that that skill is just there, which is, and then she's naturally athletic, which is great. So I mean that's awesome. Like if you have that gift, run with it. Because a lot of people, like I would say, like I'm definitely not like a natural. Everything that I've had to do, I've had to like work at constantly. You know, like the only thing that I was really natural at was strength, right? So I mean, like I've had people that have like, you know, done something in a match where it's completely gone sideways and they're like falling to their death, you know, and I'm able to like reach out and like catch them, and like I'm strong enough to hold them and take the weight. Yeah. So that's my advantage. Like I'm able to kind of be that like base for everybody, mm-hmm. and not fall apart.
That's yeah, that would think that would be very important, especially if you're like doing a bunch of high, like I don't do a lot of high flying moves because I think it would be cruel of me to expect someone else to try and catch me.
I know, that's the main reason, like everyone's like, oh, why don't you do moonsault? I'm like, well, like as I tried doing them years ago, like in camp, I learned them the same day I wrestled Moose. Okay. And I was getting it pretty well, and then like there was a guy in the camp, John Bolin, and I love this guy to death, like he's one of my favorite human beings. And he was like, I think you could jump up higher and further. And I was like, okay. Like, I was like, I just like talked myself and I just psyched myself up. And I ended up like inside the rope somehow. Like, I don't know what happened, but like, I was like, you know what? Nope. And I just kept thinking about, cause I was like, the way I was hitting the mat too, I was like, I couldn't imagine being like 130 pounds and taking this from me. Like, I was like, man, I'd probably break somebody's ribs. Whoa. So, you know, that's just like, I mean, for me, it's like I come hard and fast. So it's just like flip and the velocity's there. And then you've got the weight to that. And my bone structure is pretty solid. So when you have like four girls and three of them do moonsaults, like does the fourth girl doing a moonsault mean anything anymore?
Yeah, you know, fair.
Like, I mean, if I got over my I stopped psyching myself out and like practiced it like every day, probably could pull it off. But at the same time, like I know I'm good at strength moves and, you know, picking people up and doing suplexes and more of the technical stuff, mm-hmm. is what I'm better at. And my flexibility has always kind of been like something that I've used to my advantage. So there's a lot of things that I do that other people aren't able to do. So that's the kind of way, you know, they can't do those things, but so they can do the high flying stuff.
Yeah. I do use the moonsault sometimes.
Good for you.
And the first time I ever like had to hit it was on Matt Hart.
Oh boy.
It was up in Radway. And mm-hmm. like I just started doing it so it could be something someone could get out of the way of and I crash and burn and they can, you know, set me up for a move or something. I never actually expected to do it on anyone, but Matt and Squig were both like insistent. No, you have to hit that. And I was like, okay, cool. I hope the landing goes well because I don't want to cripple Matt Hart and then have Bret Hart think I'm an asshole for the rest of my life, you know?
Right. I know there's all that pressure.
Yeah.
Well, when I was doing the cage match against Giselle and Brandi Rhodes was on the outside, at some point I was potentially supposed to come over and like jump down on the cage and then like kick Brandy like on my landing. Okay. And I was like, you want me to monkey myself and then not crush a 120-pound goddess? Okay. No problem. I'm like, I don't want to be that person that has to go backstage after this match and be like, hey, Cody,
we should
have a chat. Sorry in advance. So, I mean, like, I worked out something different in the moment. But those moments come up where you're like, please don't die. Please don't die. Yeah. And like, that's kind of how I was looked at doing like high flying. I mean, I'm not good with heights in general. Like, I'm terrified of heights to begin with. But I think I've always been like I had like my rib cage is so like when I was doing amateur wrestling, like when I would like scoop someone up for a pin and stuff and like land on them, like my rib cage would just like grind into them. And that's not even with impact or anything. That's just like rolling them up from like on all fours. And like the amount of girls that were like, my God. Like, and they had like bruises all down their, like their midsection and stuff. I was like, man, if I came at someone doing a moonsault off the top and like crush them, like I would. Yeah. So it's a fear.
That happened to me as well. I did a match with Squig a little while ago and I went for the moonsault. The plan was for him to move out of the way. But he didn't move fast enough, so I landed on him, and I was just ugh. Like, oh God, did I just like cripple the promoter? And no, sure enough, he was totally fine, and I just rolled him over and like covered him for a pin or whatever.
But yeah,
it was one a of lot those of things where it was like, I'm glad that, you know, I didn't murder him.
Yeah, a lot of times, like it's in our head, like we're thinking it's gonna be worse than it is. You know, like, you know, chances are they'll be fine, yeah. You know, and they're tough enough to take it. But there's always that, like, what if this happens? Or, you know. Yeah. And then then you have to be like, you have to live with it. Yeah. And I'm not good with guilt.
No.
So, you know, in the future, there's a chance I might whip that out at some point. But, you know, I'm going to try and to get out to these camps now that I have a little bit more freedom with my work schedule, although they've been kind of unrelenting with me during COVID. But, yeah, like I'd like to get in there and kind of just like dust off some of the ring rust, because I think we all kind of had that at the beginning before, you know, there was a camp available and all that stuff. So,
yeah, we're always looking for new people to come down and train with us. Like, even I went today, and it was just me and MRB and Zoe. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, so it was like, where is everybody? Like, what's going on?
Well, it is the long weekend, so yeah, people are probably camping.
Did a couple of things, and then, you know, pretty much, like, called it a day after, you know, practicing one or two things. And
well, I hope to... Yeah, I'll probably see you in there eventually. Yeah,
it would be nice to have you come down. It'd be cool if Bobby could come down sometime too.
Yeah.
How is Bobby doing?
He's doing all right, you know. He's the COVID. He was working the whole time, so they've been running him down for a shoot job and stuff like that. But he's doing pretty good.
Right on.
Yeah,
right
we've on. Worked out our differences as opponents.
Oh, yeah. Didn't he have a match with you where he was wrestling in drag?
Yes, he did. Yeah.
How did that go?
It wasn't like a typical match, but it was...
Sounds like it was a comedy affair.
Oh, yeah. I would say, so we had the match that we had, I want to say after that in Calgary, was probably one of the best matches of my career. Everything just clicked, and like we, like the crowd was just eating it up the whole time. And there was a moment where I was worried and he was worried, I think, that we were going to lose them with kind of the way it was set up, that we were like, or like how things were going. I was like, oh, they're going to, you know, we're going to lose them at this point. And then they didn't, and they just stayed there. And then like it turned it up at the end. It was really, really cool. So like when I hit the submission and, I went over, the response was there, my adrenaline was at like an all time high. I was just like, and I felt like I could just like do a backflip, although I would never try that because I'd probably just land on my head. But I felt like I could.
Yeah, that's the one of the great things about wrestling is you get these moments where you just feel like an absolute like king.
Yeah. You know? Like, yeah. That was definitely a moment there for me. So
that's awesome. Anyway, like I say, I don't want to keep you too long. So let's get you to hit your like social media plugs if you'd like to plug your band. What's your band called?
It's called the Wow Band.
The Wow Band, and you guys have CDs out and stuff?
No, we just do the one I'm in now is kind of like a top 40s band. So we do like casinos and like grand openings, and we do sometimes small pubs and stuff, but we usually do more like a big band type thing. We're a show band, so you get to see me in my glitzed out sequins dresses and high heels and dancing for
Do you play an instrument?
No, I sing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I am the instrument.
Fair enough.
Yeah, no, I really wish I had learned instruments as a kid, but like I got more into like drama and stuff like that a little bit more than I did band. I did like choir and stuff, so that was more my forte, so I kind of stuck to more of the vocal side of things. But yeah, the Wow Band, we haven't really been able to do anything because all the venues have been shut down, but that's normally what we do. We perform at like a lot of the Edmonton casinos, and we did the grand opening for the Lloydminster Casino. And
consider getting the band to come out to the wrestling show to play you to the ring or anything?
Definitely have. It's been talked about in the past, and either I'll sing myself out, or I have a friend that was in our band. He does a lot of the announcing for like the stadium games.
Okay.
So that guy that like talks really deep into the microphone at the games and stuff that we all like don't know who he is. He was in the band at one point. So he has an awesome voice. It's great to hear because he would pull that voice out, and it was just like, I was like, oh my God, you're that guy. But yeah, he can do metal. So I have like my entrance music right now is kind of like a metal cover of Poor Unfortunate Souls. And I was like, can you sing this? And he's like, yes, I can. So I was like, perfect. Like, if we can get this happening. And then I have a friend that's a music producer.
From The Little Mermaid?
Yeah, it's a metal cover of that song.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, and then I have my friend in Toronto is a music producer. So he's working on an all-original song potentially for me in the future. So I'll have my own original entrance music where it's not like ripped off of anywhere else.
It's the sort of thing you don't have to worry about. Oh, is this show going to be like put out on like a TV? Like, is there
going
to be a rights situation where I'm not allowed to use my music or whatever?
Exactly. So yeah, we me and him met in a band camp like when we were like 16, and we performed together, and then he was like my best friend ever since. Like, I just clicked with the guy, and he was a Jeff Hardy fan when we were kids, so he made his own Jeff Hardy shirt, and like he would do crazy stuff off like his like backyard wrestling, and he would do like stuff on the trampoline. He made like a dummy and he wrestled that. It was he's like my wrestling soulmate. Like, he's like I don't know. I'm so glad I met him. But yeah, he went the music route, you know, and then I went the wrestling route. So we kind of lived vicariously through each other in that sense. And he's doing crazy good stuff from, he's working with people that are now nominated for Juno Awards and stuff. So he's doing crazy good for his music career in Toronto. So.
Right on. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing your new entrance music and whatnot.
Yeah.
Okay, solid. So what about your social media as we were trying to get to there?
Yeah, I just have my Cap on Hees Facebook page. So Cap on Hees CNWA is the handle. And then I have my Instagram, which is just at Cap on Hees. And I don't really use all the other ones yet. I'm still not part of the generation with the Twitter and Snapchat and all that glorious stuff.
I have Twitter, but I very seldom use it.
I don't know what I'm doing. Yeah, I don't have... I looked...
Not confident in my tweeting ability.
No, I don't know how people do it. I remember trying to tweet, and I was like, how do I do this? And like, it's like, you have reached your word limit. I was like, well, I just deleted it. I just never posted anything. I just was like, no, this isn't for me.
Yeah. I love Instagram, though. I think that's my favorite one because it's like Facebook is, it leads to a lot of people like trying to voice their political opinions and like a lot of just like people complaining and bitching about their day or whatever situation. Whereas Instagram is just like pictures of people's dogs and stuff or like wrestling pictures. And I like that kind of stuff, you know? It's more positive.
Absolutely. I agree. Yeah.
Anyway, I want to thank you very much for jumping on here and taking part in the podcast. It's been a long time coming, and it was my honor to have you on. So thank you very much.
Well, thanks for having me. Nova Scotia and New Brunswick, Quebec and Newfoundland.